Hi, guys, and welcome to today's podcast, where I'm joined by Mr. Glenn Ingram, who's based in California. Is that right?
We're actually based in Las Vegas, Nevada, with an office over in California.
Oh, man, that's even worse. That's even worse. I'll tell you why it's worse. I made the trip to America last year, and I was in California, which I absolutely loved. It was a place called Anaheim, which where NFG Rockstars was, and then I went to Vegas. Man, what a place. What a fucking place. My first ever trip to America, and absolutely loved Vegas and California. I went to New York as well for a few days, just because while I was over there, I thought, let's try it all out. But I think Vegas is really, I don't know, just the bright lights and all the films and everything I've seen, it just blew my brains. What a place. Great experience. Great weather as well. And the people were actually strangely really nice. Very, very nice people as well. So I was hoping you were in California and not Vegas. I get jealous when people say they're in Vegas. But anyway, enough about that. You're in Vegas. So for anyone who hasn't heard of you, Glenn, just give us a bit of background in terms of how long you've been in the industry and a bit about what you do.
Sure. Well, I started about 20 years ago. I took a job with one of those good old phone books. So I was a phone book salesman starting back in the early 2000s. And it didn't take long to migrate towards the digital side when they started doing that, because, you know, putting squares on a piece of paper wasn't very exciting and customers didn't care about it too much. So I was kind of pushed in that direction, end up helping them kind of start up their digital side there, started doing some PPC, some SEO and some websites and whatnot. And one time about 12 years ago, I went to Texas, went out to California for a couple of weeks, and was just trying to pick anyone's brain that I could find, whether it be on LinkedIn, Facebook, just trying to learn as much as I could. And I finally went back and said, okay, I went to our VP and said, I know what we need to do. And so we built some products, built a couple of websites, got them to the first page, said, okay, now we can start charging some real money. And he made the comment to me, I didn't ask you to find a better product. I asked you to find a better way to sell the crap we had. And I realized I couldn't sell crap very well at that point. So I started my own agency about a decade ago in Nebraska, moved out to California. Like I said, now we're in Vegas, just doing web design and SEO, basically. You know, we also do some PPC and some other types of marketing as value-added services for our clients. But just been a basically digital agency for a long time, working with about any type of business out there. I really don't care what type of business the people are. I care about the type of person the business owner is. If they're a good person, we'll find a way to help them.
Yeah.
A couple of years ago, we went down the accessibility route. So I had two attorneys contact me within, it seemed like a week or two, and then a friend of mine contacted me a couple of weeks later about all the people in California or all the businesses that were being sued because their websites didn't work for blind people. And my first response was, I have to make a visual medium work for someone that doesn't see. Then I remembered, yeah, we're in California. Yeah, so businesses started being sued out there. So we kind of went down the rabbit hole to learn more and more about accessibility. And then actually this year, I was actually certified by an international company as a specialist in accessibility. So it's just kind of one of the niches we're trying to do to try and help everybody understand that, you know, we don't think about it when we can see good, when we can hear good and stuff like that. But a lot of people out there can't, according to the World Health Organization or the CDC, about 20% of the people have one form of a long-term disability or another, besides short-term or environmental disability. So just trying to make sure the internet works good for everybody.
Yeah. No, it's a very interesting angle that you're going in at, and not one that I'm too familiar with, I'm not going to lie. I'm not sure how the laws lie here in the UK in terms of, you know, you're going to get sued if you don't, you know, have a website that is accessible for blind people and stuff like that. But yeah, I mean, it's something I never even thought about it until you said it. Like 20% of people out there, you know, you're missing out 20% of a slice of the pie. If someone said to me tomorrow, Craig, enter this niche and you can get a 20% slice of the pie, you'd be like, right, so how many people are there? You know, this is a worldwide audience. So the 20%, when you look at it that way, may seem minimal, and people may go, oh, it doesn't matter, you know, whatever. But that could amount to a serious, serious amount of money. But what I want to do is dig a bit deeper into what accessibility actually means and what's involved with that. You know, what sort of things makes, you know, because as you said, you know, why would we be trying to make this visual, nice looking website appeal to someone who can't see? You know, where the hell do you even start with that?
Well, a lot of it, people that are blind use what are called screen readers. And, you know, screen readers were built by programmers. And, you know, people that type code just don't think like you and I do. So they couldn't use normal code. They used stuff that's called ARIA and HTML 5.7.2. So, like, where we would make something B for bold, it has to be the other codes. And so instead of italics, it's I instead of LI and stuff like that. So you have to tweak a lot of the coding so that it works for screen readers. For people that are SEO people, you can't stuff all your keywords into your picture and your alt tag. You actually have to paint a word picture of your alt tag so that it works for a blind person, so that when their screen reader sees this picture, they can see, you know, a guy with a black background with a red basketball jersey on. So it kind of explains to them verbally what is behind there. So it's just doing a lot of little things to code the website on the backside so that it works better. It's taking away some of these people that think they want these cute, frilly little colors, because 9% of guys by the time they're 50 are colorblind. So if you don't have enough color contrast, you can't read it. You hit the back button. So these customers are paying us for SEO. We don't want them to ever hit that back button. They want to stay there and spend money. If you have MS, MD, cerebral palsy, and you can't use a mouse, well, then everything has to be programmed properly on the back side so that your tab key turns into your pointer, and your inner key turns into your clicker, and you can navigate an entire website with only two keys on the keyboard.
Right. And again, that's something I never even thought about. You know, I think doing that stuff, it's great that, you know, someone is doing that stuff to help those people out there. But I'd love to know, you know, in terms of the law, do you know much about, and I know you said California, is that a California thing where you're fined for that? Or, you know, for not having that? Or is that something that's in a much wider American audience?
Yeah, in 2010, at the anniversary of the Americans with Disabilities Act, starting in 1990, President Obama suggested that the DOJ should add websites and digital products to the Americans with Disabilities Act. So it's been a kind of a pissing contest between politicians back and forth since then. They've added parts of it to certain sections and not parts of it to certain sections. And President Trump has basically said, let the courts handle it. So a big thing that happened over here October of last year was Domino's Pizza, a huge pizza chain, had been sued a couple years before that. The judge initially, federal judge said, no, your website doesn't have to comply with it, because when you read the laws about a business, it's about your place of business. So your doors, your bathrooms and stuff like that. Well, the blind person appealed that to the federal appeals court, and the federal appeals court said, no, a website is an extension of your business or acts in lieu of it if you don't have one. And in October of last year, the Supreme Court refused to hear the case, agreeing with the opinion from the appellate court. So where we're seeing like 2,000 or 3,000 federal cases a year. There's a law firm out of Chicago that kind of has been following this and studying it for ever since it began. And they said that this year, between state and federal, there's going to be 100,000 businesses in the U.S. sued. And when they did this back in 2010, it was about 11 or 12, the United Nations actually signed a bill, and 121 nations across the world agreed with it. So yeah, you have rules there as far as how punitive they are. I'm not sure. It's EN 319 or something like that is over by you.
Bloody hell. That's some pretty strong, you know, laws and stuff like that that are in place. But what does a website that's designed very well for accessibility and stuff like that look like? Does it look any different from a normal website, or?
A lot of little things. Your color contrast is better, so sometimes your colors are a little bit different compared to like a customer's logo. You get rid of some stupid things that marketers do, so like buttons don't say click here, learn more, and stuff like that. Because the way screen readers are built, they're built to kind of peruse titles, peruse sections, and stuff like that. So if all your buttons say learn more, learn more, learn more, you know, when you can't read, you're depending on your ear and what it says to do it. So it has to be, you know, find out more about search engine optimization, learn more about plumbing in Sacramento and stuff like that. So you have to kind of, again, think about somebody that can't see as you're programming the stuff, whether you're programming the front side of the button or the back side of the button, so that it works for different people.
So, and I've got another question, and excuse my ignorance if this is absolutely horrendous. But you're doing all of these kind of changes to a website. Is that not going to have an impact in the SEO? Like, it surely got to.
What's beautiful about this is everything that goes into WCAG, they're the Worldwide Consortium is the one that came up with these rules. So we've been following those for SEO guidelines for years. They follow accessibility standards for SEO. Website accessibility follows website standards. So if you've been paying attention to them over the years, it's a fairly easy transition. I think that's why it was easy for us to do it, because I traveled around the country last year talking to WordCamps and meetups and stuff like that, trying to get developers to understand this. And for people that weren't doing SEO or following web standards to do this stuff, it's a huge mind change and just really screws them up. If you understand those things and those were your fundamentals for building a website for SEO, then it's easier to make the conversion.
What's it here? So say someone comes to you and they've got like a 100-page WordPress website, some blogger or something like me who's maybe got some tutorials and stuff. You know, is there, like, what's the process? Like, is there an audit tool that like you stick it through and it comes back saying, this is a mess, that's a mess, change this, change that? Or is this all manual work?
Yeah, most of it's manual. There are some assessment tools out there that each have kind of strengths and weaknesses. You have 11 primary aspects of accessibility that the tools can test some of them, but where most people screw up is they don't understand that you have to test it manually, either by yourself or by somebody that has a disability. What most people in the industry do is they're going to try and shove audits down people's throats to say, oh, we need to find out everything that's wrong with your website before we can tell you how much to fix it. So like your 100-page website, you're probably looking at $12,000 to $15,000 for an audit. Mm-hmm. And then they'll give a report to you and say, we'll talk to you for about 30 minutes to an hour and answer any questions you have once you've gone through this audit. And if you don't have any experience in it, what I found when we started doing this a couple of years ago was 70% of the time, the owner of the company would come back to me pissed off and say, we can't figure this out, how much to fix it? Okay, if you want me to fix your site, then it's probably about 1.2 times whatever my audit was. And so I kept seeing business owners getting madder and madder at this system. So I finally started telling them, you know what? Here's the reality. We've made so many of those that your 100-page website might take us 3 or 4 more hours to build the entire thing right than if it was one we were building before we did accessibility. So I was telling them, you know what? If your arm's broken and the bone's sticking out through your skin, do you really need an x-ray? No, you probably don't need an audit to know your website's screwed. So how about this? Instead of charging you 12 grand for an audit, another 12 or 15 to fix it, how about if I just fix it right from the beginning for 10?
Yeah, well, that was going to be my next question. You know, do you have like some ready-made kind of thing where, you know, someone comes to you and you can just fix it right from the start, adding on, you know, their different, you know, products or services or whatever it's going to be? Because it would seem to be, you know, to me, to be absurd that if you had, and that's just, you know, a 100-page website. If someone came to you with a large e-commerce website, surely to God, that's a no-go. There's got to be a bit, you just have to move platform or something.
But the biggest thing is we have someone comes with a Shopify or a BigCommerce, something like that. It's not on WordPress. You know, you're going to move it to Word. You know, some people don't understand the difference in optimizing a Woo and a WordPress site versus BigCommerce or Shopify. It's going to cost them so much in the long run that it's cheaper to spend more money at the beginning. But yeah, I had a jewelry store that contacted me sometime about a year ago. Oh, shoot, 2 years ago. And nope, it was a year ago. And last spring, all of a sudden I get a call from this attorney that I had met, said, I had a customer just get sued. I need you to jump on and get a hold of them real quick. I need to fix the website. Well, it was the people that contacted me last summer and never got off the ground to do anything. And I think they had 3,000 products on their website. So when you look at 3,000 products to actually take someone that speaks English, not a VA, and actually put an appropriate description into that alt tag, I think I had 160 hours of a person that actually makes decent money just doing alt tags on that. So that one e-commerce site was like 32 grand.
Jesus. But are there options if a new business, so a guy's coming out, starting up a new business, are there like off-the-shelf platforms where you can get a website that is ready for this type of thing? No. Nothing at the moment.
No. For someone like that, if they don't need something that's custom, we have some themes that we've already built up. So we have 4 different layouts that we can put in any type of industry. Give us your pictures, give us your content, and those we can do for about the half the price to what you do a custom site to get them started so they can do something out of the box. And if you're in the U.S., the nice thing about this is for small businesses, less than 30 employees or less than $1 million in revenue, there are federal tax credits that pay for half of all their website accessibility, maintenance, and building. So at least Uncle Sam's paying for half of it for them.
And tell me this, and you, again, don't have to answer this if you don't want to, but wouldn't there be quite a lot of money, you know, finding a niche for, you know, finding niche websites for blind people, and you just have that whole process and everything set up? You must make a shit ton of money, surely, even if it's, you know, blind people buy everyday products anyway, but surely that is a niche within itself. Are you finding that a lot of SEOs are jumping into this, or are people just like scared because there's so much work involved in the, you know, at the start to jump into such a niche?
The biggest thing I've seen with SEOs is they're trying to take shortcuts. I know it's hard to believe that an SEO would want to take a shortcut and not do something right in the long way. There are some things out there that they're calling them plugins. Basically what they do, it's an overlay of code. So you put a few lines of code over the head of the footer and they're saying, we fixed it. Now it works for everybody. And there are a few different marketers out there and that we all know that are pushing the heck out of some of the stuff. And I love the fact that they're pushing these products, because every month I'm getting called from customers that have those products on their website that just got sued and now they're paying us to do it right.
Yeah. No, it's a, I think for me, you know, as it, you'll have the same thought process as well as an SEO guy in general. You're always just looking for something that's relatively easy where you can make a shit ton of money. But with all of that other stuff, you're just like, oh, to hell with that. Especially if you're getting your ass sued for it. But I think, you know, I'm not obviously going to condone anyone pushing plugins out, but it's the same all the time. You know, plugins just cover up things and never really work effectively. I think you're right in what you say. Get the job done properly, because you're going to sit there and clean up. You know, for people who have probably spent a fortune, the thing is, people are probably paying the same price to them using a plugin than it would be to you to do it properly as well, because they just don't know that plugins are being used.
Yeah, there's one company out there that's advertising their butts off, that's saying for $450 a year they'll fix everything. Well, you've been doing this for a minute. Have you ever seen a plugin you could put on a website that has smart enough artificial intelligence that it could take every picture, interpret it, and explain exactly what it's looking at?
Not to my knowledge.
Could it look at your background there with the different shades of black and know where that red and white hits it? Is there enough color contrast? Does it need to either change the color of your shirt or the color of your background?
I wouldn't. Nah.
No, that's why when you really think about it, and I talk to different SEOs about this, well, I got this plugin, it's working great. I'm like, really? How would it do this? How would it do that? You know, when it's here talking and it's watching a video on there, does it know how to go ahead and transcribe the video and make it do closed captioning for someone that can't hear very well? And you get no. Well, then your plugin doesn't work very damn well.
So obviously the government have rolled out, you know, these kind of rules and regulations. Is there funding available for businesses to become compliant? Like, so you're a business, surely it wouldn't be fair to have a small e-commerce website, one-man band, and all of a sudden government decides you're getting your ass sued if you don't have it, you know, made accessible. What's the situation like in terms of government funding or help to get you on board to help them out?
I haven't looked into it over by you. You know, it'd be worth doing a couple of Google searches and stuff like that. What we found in the States, like I said, there's federal tax credits that will give them half of what they spend. So let's say you're doing an e-commerce site that costs $5,000, $8,000, and then you're doing ongoing maintenance for it, putting in pictures and stuff like that for them. So maintenance, as long as it's associated with accessibility, if they spend $10,250 a year in the U.S., they get $5,000 tax credit back from the government. There are different states that have different tax credits. So not bad when you can tell a customer, yeah, I'm going to help you with a website. I'm going to charge the same as the next guy down the road, $4,000, $5,000, $6,000. But guess what? When you file your taxes next year, you get half of that back from the government. It's not a little way to compete against other people.
Yeah, no, I think it's only fair that people do get some element of help with that, because these things do cost an arm and a leg, because it's such a specialist job. And you, as you say, the guys, you know, just doing alt tags, you know, for 160 hours, and he's on real good money. Whereas, you know, I could get someone to do that, you know, in the Philippines or something, and pay them next to nothing. But yeah, it seems to be a very, very specialist job. But going forward, is that something you're going to stick to? Is there more other things you're going to add to the mix, or is this because I'm going to just make a wild assumption, but I'm going to assume that even over the next 5-10 years, websites are not going to be that accessible. Not everyone's going to take that action. So you're going to have a lot of work over the next 5 to 10 years simply doing that.
Yeah, there's a company called WebAIM. They have one of those little tools to do assessments. They did a test last February, a year ago, on 1 million homepages. 2.2% of them were compliant. They did the test again last August. 2.8% were compliant. I think there's going to be a little bit of work, since there's like 13 billion websites on the internet for people that actually do this stuff.
Yeah. But
the nice thing about this, and I'm part of a group that we're actually educating people so they can talk to their customers about this properly. And then we provide white label service, so we can do all the programming behind the scenes. They can just go sell it, because it is a bit of a change. And you have a lot of marketers here that don't know how to build websites anyway. So by doing that for them, we're just trying to help get the word out there more and do that for them. Because you probably will appreciate this, you know, as when you're doing SEO and doing it right, and not doing it for $200-$300 like some of these people that send out a lot of emails, the client pool is about this big of people that will honestly invest and build proper optimization of visual or online visibility. But a lot of people have websites. So it's a good way in the door, create a relationship, prove reliability, and then start offering more services to these clients.
Yeah. Well, I think it's, you know, a lot of people, agency-wise and stuff, you know, I've always seen people saying, the agency life's dead and all of that kind of stuff. But I think for you, it's probably going to, you know, you probably barely even scratched the surface at this point, which is good to hear that you've kind of niched down and, you know, and can focus on something that's actually going to add value to businesses as well, and obviously stop getting their asses sued. But typically, how long does a website take? I know that you can't give an answer and you're going to say it depends and all that, but if someone comes to you with a 100-page WordPress website, just a simple blog, nothing too technical on there, no e-commerce functionality, like if I came to you tomorrow and said, listen, Glenn, I need this done, you know, to be compliant, how long is the turnaround on something like that?
My typical answer for everything, unless it's a huge e-com site or something, especially we're doing, is 30 days. Does it take us 30 days? No. That site we probably have done in about 2 weeks. That way we've got a couple of weeks for you to go back, take a look at it, and give you a round of edits or something like that. But I always tell everyone 30 days. You know, if we get to the point where we are more than 10 days or 2 weeks out, then I'll hire more developers.
Yeah. Oh, that's very, very, very interesting. So would it be safe to say that you probably don't – do you still do general web design? Is there any point in your business just doing – average Joe web design if you're going to have all these people probably banging at your door saying, sort this out?
Well, I kind of like to aggravate people in our industry. So once it got down to where for that average Joe, the plumber, the doctor, the chiropractor, where it might be an hour more to build the website, we quit charging more for accessibility to build it. Now we charge a little bit more to maintain it, because you have to make sure that as you're going on, you maintain accessibility. But again, even though we're charging a little bit more, 90% of my clients fit in that tax bracket to where what we're charging more, the government's paying for it, they're not paying for it. So yeah, it's not a bad little niche. And what we've kind of had some fun with it here in the last year, restaurants were being sued quite a bit in California. And I don't know if you've ever worked with restaurant owners. Typically, they don't spend a lot of money on advertising and optimization and stuff. But just by taking these websites that are built on some of these cheap do-it-yourself platforms and building them in WordPress. I think the best example was we launched a pizza website 4 weeks ago, maybe. And think they weren't on the first 10 pages of Google because it was one of those build it places that we'll leave nameless. We won't name them right now. And before I even put Yoast on it, they were ranking number one for pizza in their city just because we did all the on-page right. They already had a lot of links coming back to it, so they had a decent domain authority. It's just they run on a crap platform.
Jeez. So in your opinion, and I know it's something, again, you probably can't answer wholeheartedly, but do you think Google will eventually, if they're not already, give weight to websites that have got accessibility, like serious weight to web? Because, you know, it's like they always said, mobile friendly, you know, websites are not going to rank well if they're not mobile friendly. Now, I've still got a lot of old test websites and they still rank like hell and they're not mobile friendly. You know, and I know Google scaremonger when they're going to say, if you don't get accessibility, you're not going to rank, and, you know, the other guys will rank who are doing it, and then, you know, it's all this kind of scaremongering. But have you seen any kind of evidence? I know you're, because you're changing, obviously, platform there, you know, where you're maybe going from some shitty thing like Wix to WordPress, and, you know, you're sorting stuff out, and you're going to see an instant boost like that. But do you think, have you ever just got a website that was on WordPress and everything else was all right, and the only thing you really changed was the accessibility, and did you see a rise in rankings?
Yeah, because WordPress is a contributor to W3C. So, I'm sorry, WordPress, Google is. So when you take a look at, we talked about shortcuts. 6-7 years ago, I had a friend of mine that owned some companies that we're doing some optimization for. He bought a competitor and said, hey, can you take this website that we bought from our competitors and just make sure that if someone lands on it, they know to go to our office versus the other ones. So I said, sure. He's kind of like a little brother. And sometimes a little bit of ADD kicks in when we're doing things. And we built a one-page website. And all of a sudden, I'm talking to him like 3 or 4 months later, and we're taking a look to see how optimizations are going in the different cities that he's in. And that stupid little web page that I built was actually ranking ahead of the site he was paying me to optimize. They were 1 and 2. And he's like, oh, thanks, buddy. I didn't know you were going to do that for me. You know, as being the true consummate salesperson, said, you know, I got your back, brother. Of course I did. And then I went in to figure out how the hell I did it. And it was funny. When you looked at it, I hit every portion of website standards with the advanced alt tags, with the schema and stuff like that. All the things that you're supposed to do for a website that also includes in and works with accessibility. So for years, when I've been talking in front of SEO people doing this or in front of a live group, and they've been looking for shortcuts, I said, guys, shortcuts are easy. Learn how to do on-page right, and you don't need all these stupid little tools. So yeah, Google's been proving that for years, that if you follow web standards, you're going to rank better. If you follow web standards, you're going to be better for accessibility. They work hand in hand.
And one last question I want to ask you, and again, it's probably a complete noob question. Someone gets a website from you and it's all done to your standards, you know, you paid for and everything, and you built it on WordPress, and then I rock up and go into add post, put some stuff on there, and click publish. Do I need to do anything, or are these all of these future posts going to be up to the same standard, you know, have that accessibility standard built in the background somewhere, or do you need to go in and edit something?
That's been some of the biggest change of some of my marketing friends that we've been doing work for behind the scenes. They lose their mind more than the customer does. The customers no longer have access to websites. Everything on a website goes into our maintenance and marketing plan. We do all the edit for them and do that because, yeah, they do one post that has an H tag screwed up. They put one picture in there that doesn't have an alt tag properly. There are little things you can do within the constructs of a post that you can control yourself that you can do to screw up accessibility.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's probably better locking people out their own websites. And I totally get that. You know, we all do sometimes forget to add a tag here or there and stuff like that. When you're rushing around, you're like, I'll get that post out, and you know, if it's anything like me and the whole, you know, it would break everything. But it does sound like a lot of hard work. But as I say, it's a very real thing out there, and you know, if the law is the law and people have to suck it up and get their websites dealt with and stuff like that. But, you know, when someone, you know, I get people who want to come to me and get SEO as a service. Is there a place or anywhere you could recommend if someone's watching this saying, right, I don't have a website to give to Glenn to do all his accessibility stuff, but I'd really love to get into this niche. What advice could you give them? Was this just a case of you going about all different places and picking everyone's brain? Or is there like standard training where someone can say, I want to be an accessibility guy now and go and train themselves up on it?
Unfortunately, there's not a good short answer to this. I mean, if you go to W3C and start running through all their stuff, you'll start learning about it. When we started this a couple years ago, we were building about 300-400 sites a year. Mm-hmm. And I was lucky that I was at the point with my agency that I could kind of detach a little bit. And so I spent probably 50-60 hours a week on this for about 2 months. Not just only reading that and learning it, talking to everybody I could in the industry. Because what's frustrating is you can go through and read those things and say, I remember, again, 2 months in, so I'm like, okay, I got this. Let's go build it. And then you start getting a friggin' error code from this treatment tool or an error code over here. It's like, what the hell's going on? And then you have to have people around the country. I mean, I've got a friend in Canada. I've got a friend over in northern Idaho. I've got a friend in Australia. You know, we each kind of had different backgrounds and stuff like this. Because if you've been working in academia, you've been doing this for over a decade. Because mm-hmm. universities have been forced to do this stuff and they've had to learn it. And so, like, with doing this and building as many websites as we do, it took us about 5 months to get the thing down. So what I've been telling to people is, if you're not going to build hundreds of websites, if you're going to build one or two, is it really worth your time to spend all this to do it? You know what? We have there's a group out there called Web.
And we've been cut off. Yeah. No worries. So you were saying about the group.
Yeah, we have a group called Web Alley. That's WebA11Y. A11Y is called a numeral, so it means there's 11 letters between A and Y in accessibility. You know, we post a lot of information in there. That's a free group to people where we just kind of share stuff with. We also have a paid group and stuff like that for people that really want to get involved in them. But if you just take a look over there, you'll get a lot of information about some of the things that are going on, some videos that I've made, some presentations that I've done, articles that we share on a regular basis, just to kind of give people more of an understanding is if they want to decide to delve in a little bit deeper.
Yeah. And before we go, is there anything else that I've not asked that you feel is quite important for people to know about website accessibility?
Just you have to be careful with it. The laws are about as screwy as your GDPR. You know, your GDPR doesn't matter where the people are, it's where the person is, their resident of Europe. With these, it doesn't matter where your website is, it's where the disabled person is. So a disabled person in California can sue a business anywhere in the world if their website doesn't work properly. And I don't think it's really necessarily a disabled person. I think a lot of it's pushed by some attorneys, because you see the same law firms having disabled people that they're filing multiple lawsuits on. But if you don't think it's not big business, there's one blind guy in San Diego that last year made $3 million off of settlements besides collecting his disability.
Jeez.
2 years ago, there was a woman in a wheelchair out of Arizona that sued hotels if she found a pool or a photo of a pool and there wasn't a lift helper in and out. From the cases we could trace, she made $13 million that year. And now if you really not, I'm going to scare the hell out of everybody with one last thing. Anyone that's managing pictures on a website or managing pictures on a GMB in the US, these same people are using those to take a look at them. And if they can see in your business on any photo that you have something that violates the laws for a disabled person in a business, here comes a lawsuit off a picture you just published for somebody.
Oh, the laws are a pain in the ass.
Yep.
But yeah, no, it's all very interesting stuff. I had no idea that it was, you know, that enforced as such. I'll need to do some research and see what how the land lies in the UK. But no, I do appreciate your time, Glenn, for coming on and sharing some of those valuable tips about that. Now, if anyone is listening and want to get a hold of you, ask questions, you know, maybe use you to white label this stuff, where is the best place to get a hold of you?
They can either go to my personal site, which is websearchpros.com. If they're looking for the white label, that's WebAlley, like we talked about, webA11Y.net. And that's where we do white labeling, coaching, and assisting with them and help them with a lot of their business as well from a kind of a partner standpoint.
No, that's very, very good stuff. I will make sure that those links are below the video when this goes live as well. And thank you very much, Glenn. It's been a pleasure to have you on and give us some important insights to all of that good stuff. And hopefully we'll be able to catch up at an event in America some point as well and have a beer.
You know what? I drink stuff all day long. It may as well have a hop or two in it.
No worries. Cheers.
All right. Thanks for having me on, buddy.
Cheers.